Hey, I'm Dr. Michael Hunter, forensic pathologist from Autopsy, Reels Channel's medical mystery series on Podcast One and Apple Podcasts. Be sure to download the Podcast One app and subscribe. Then go to Reels.com, that's R-E-E-L-Z.com, to find more programs like this one on Reels Channel.
Some sad news from the country music world this morning. Tammy Wynette, who sang powerful songs of pain, sorrow, and occasionally triumph, has died.
Miss Tammy Wynette!
Tammy Wynette was known as the first lady of country music.
She was the best country singer that ever came down the pipe.
It's Tammy Wynette.
The first female country star to sell a million records.
She was a pioneer, and she made and paved a way for a lot of other women in country music.
Tammy Wynette!
Her stellar career spanned four decades, including 35 U.S. number ones, 30 million records sold, and two Grammy Awards.
You've been wonderful. We love you.
Throughout, she stayed faithful to her humble origins.
She was so down to earth and such a sweet, pretty, funny, spontaneous person that you just loved her.
But privately, her life was blighted by illness and a long-running battle with addiction.
Betty Ford Clinic was a very horrible time. She had to have emergency surgery, and then after that, it was just downhill from there.
At 7 p.m. on April 6th, 1998, she was found dead in her Nashville home. She was just 55 years old.
I was angry. I was just angry because she's too young. Why has this happened?
That's our question. How did she die?
Tammy's death certificate gives the cause as heart failure, and a police report states it appears the victim's death was not unexpected. But I can see what follows is a storm of controversy. And a year after she died, her body was exhumed and an autopsy performed. The manner of her death, quote, could not be determined. My aim is to shed fresh light on the tragic demise of this true country legend.
World-renowned forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter has performed around 5,000 autopsies. Collaborating closely with law enforcement, he has revealed the truth behind mysterious deaths for over 20 years.
This is Tammy Wynette's autopsy report, 25 pages long. It contains multiple clues about what was happening in the days, hours, and minutes before Tammy's passing, allowing me to determine exactly how she died.
March 9th, 1998, Nashville, Tennessee. 4 weeks before her death, Tammy is appearing on Primetime Country to help celebrate cable network TNN's 15th birthday.
Nanette England, Tammy's hairdresser and friend.
She just loved what she did. She wouldn't miss a show. She just loved every minute of being on stage, being around her fans.
But Tammy's been battling ill health for a number of years and no longer has a full-time record deal.
Tammy, we're on.
I'm with you, honey.
Her income mostly comes from the live performances her fifth husband and manager, George Richie Richardson, organizes.
He's got the show on the road.
Richie had a lot of siblings, and Mom would always say, I have to work because I have to support the Richardsons.
Welcome, Tammy Wynette.
And she had her band. She had all these people that she felt like she personally had to take care of.
Stand by your
Today, Tammy is plugging the re-release of her biggest hit, Stand By Your Man.
Jackie Daly, Tammy's daughter.
She was excited about it. It would be another chapter in her life.
Stand by your man.
Tammy's autopsy report reveals the body of a thin white female, just 64 inches long and weighing approximately 100 pounds. In terms of her BMI, yes, she's a little underweight, but that doesn't explain why she'd be dead in less than a month.
Tammy was born Virginia Wynette Pugh on May 5, 1942, in Tremont, Mississippi. But just 9 months later, her father died. Tammy's mother moved away for work when she was three, leaving her maternal grandparents to bring her up on their farm.
It was very tough. I hated the farm when I was growing up. I daydreamed a lot in the cotton fields about being someplace else and doing something else, and it was always singing, so it passed off a lot of hours for me.
She taught herself to play a variety of instruments, left behind by her father. By 19, Tammy had wed her first husband, local boy Eupel Bird, and had two daughters. With money tight, she started to sing in bars and dream of being a country artist.
My mother had a fit. She said, "You're crazy. You know, you're a little Mississippi farm girl. There's no way in the world you can do anything that somebody else hasn't already done."
After the birth of her third daughter in 1965, she left her husband, taking the kids to country music's Mecca, Nashville.
I'm not sure that anyone else would have done what she did with three babies, beating the streets every day, trying to make her dream come true.
Georgette Jones, Tammy's daughter.
It was a very male-dominated business. For every female singer, you had 10 male singers who were prosperous and doing well.
Newly blonde Tammy suffered a string of rejections. Her last chance was producer Billy Sherrill.
She walked in Billy Sherrill's office, and she hit a home run. He said she was the little girl with the teardrop in her voice. She would start to sing a word, and it would break, and then it would come out. It wouldn't just be like, "and," it would be like, "and."
Oh, I wish that we could stop this D-I-V-O-R-C-E.
Sherrill insisted she change her name to Tammy Wynette. Within a year, she had her first U.S. number one, and a star was born.
She was the very first woman to sell over 1 million copies of a record. She was a pioneer, and she made and paved a way for a lot of other women in country music.
But Tammy's medical records reveal her singing career was nearly over before it even started.
My research shows that she was hospitalized with mental health issues just 1 year before she was discovered.
In 1965, age 23, Tammy was 3 months pregnant with her third daughter. And her relationship with the two most important people in her life at breaking point.
Jan Smith, Tammy's friend and hairdresser.
Her mother didn't want her to come to Nashville. Her husband didn't want her to come. He put her in a mental hospital. They thought she was nuts.
Tammy later admitted, "I was lost in a deep depression. I would cry myself into exhaustion."
Dr. Linda Papadopoulos, psychologist.
She's constantly being belittled by the people that should support her. She feels out of control. And so the depression gets very dark and very serious.
I can see that Tammy was given a course of electroconvulsive treatment. ECT was a popular method at the time to help cure psychiatric illness and severe depression. It works by sending an electric shock to the brain to induce a seizure.
Back then, it was a horrific treatment. People weren't sedated, so they would literally, their whole bodies would convulse.
Tammy would later describe her feelings toward the shock treatment. "I was too sick to protest. There were days when I didn't care what they did to me."
Tammy would have felt betrayed by those around her. At this point, she needs to kind of make the point that you were wrong about me. And then what we then see is this need to constantly prove herself.
I also wonder, if depression had plagued her life in the past, could it have come back to haunt her later in her life?
March 27th, 1998. Nashville, Tennessee. 10 days before her death. Tammy's daughter Jackie drops by.
We were very close. I lived around the corner from her. I tried to go over there at least 2 or 3 times a week.
Great.
She had not been feeling very well.
Tammy has been plagued by long-running stomach problems, which in recent weeks have left her housebound. But today she appears on better form.
She was wanting to get out and start doing things. So I was very optimistic.
I can see her stomach problems began after the birth of her fourth daughter, almost 30 years earlier, when she was just 28.
It was a couple of months after I was born in 1970 that my mom had had some problems.
Tammy's autopsy report provides evidence that she'd had a hysterectomy. The operation was carried out to remove fibroid growths on her uterus, but it caused more problems than it solved. In her autopsy report, the medical examiner describes her stomach, small and large intestines as being, quote, matted together with marked fibrous adhesions. Adhesions are bands of fibrous glue-like scar tissue left by surgery. The problem with adhesions is that they can make tissues or organs stick together inside the body, which causes severe abdominal pain.
The scar grew into her intestines and caused her a lot of pain, a lot of pain. They went back in and cut into her again and cut the scar tissue out.
It was the beginning of a very vicious cycle in her life. She had at least 25 or 26 surgeries, all related to the issues that she had when she would continue to scar after every surgery that she would have.
Adhesions can also cause serious problems with the workings of the small intestine and bowel. This would undoubtedly have caused Tammy a lifetime of suffering, but on its own would not have caused her death. At this point, why Tammy died at just 55 years of age is still a mystery.
April 6th, 1998. Country music legend Tammy Wynette is found dead in her Nashville home. She was 55 years old. World-renowned forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter is investigating her untimely demise.
Tammy was no stranger to the surgeon's knife. She'd had a hysterectomy at 28, which had resulted in severe problems with scar tissue. Although causing constant pain on its own, it's rarely fatal. I need to keep looking if I'm going to find the cause of her death.
April 1st, 1998. 5 days before her death.
Ladies, and we have Tammy's tantalizing snacks.
Tammy is hosting a baby shower for her backup singer, Karen Sloss. It's an event she's had great pleasure organizing.
She was looking better and feeling better, and that she had a really good day that day.
And what am I going to be able to tempt you with?
She was, in fact, telling jokes and laughing and carrying on and being very, happy and just her normal outgoing self.
So, when are you going to be coming out on the road with me again? That's all I want to know.
Given Tammy's abdominal pain, I wonder if she was putting on a facade, perhaps even self-medicating with alcohol or drugs. An extensive toxicology test were carried out for a range of illicit narcotics, including cocaine and amphetamines.
Tammy never took pills. She never touched alcohol. Tammy was not a party girl.
A producer had given them marijuana one time to try, and my mom said they sat there staring at each other for like an hour and just laughing, so she couldn't see the appeal to it.
She didn't like people to be out of control. She's very anti-drugs.
And the results of toxicology tests support the claims of Tammy's friends and family. No traces of illegal narcotics were found in her system. But looking back into Tammy's medical history, I can see that she abused prescription drugs in the past to self-medicate.
It wasn't just physical pain that Tammy endured. The heroine of heartbreak, as Tammy was known, had her fair share of heartache. In 1968, her second marriage to songwriter Don Chappell failed after less than a year. She fell into the arms of her idol, country star George Jones, 11 years her senior.
George Jones was the love of her life, and I think that she was the love of George's life. They were so dadgum cute on stage.
Together they took Nashville by storm, becoming known as Mr. and Mrs. Country Music. But before long, Tammy's dream had turned to nightmare as Jones fell victim to alcohol.
He did try to stop many times and just wasn't successful at staying quit. It had obviously a horrible effect on their relationship. At some point, my mom just kind of threw up her hands and said, you know, I give up.
Her divorce from Jones in March 1975 marked the end of not just their marriage, but also their stage act. Tammy was strung out by insomnia and consumed by self-doubt.
It was a very difficult time for her. She felt like her career would not go anywhere without him.
Tammy was depressed. I think she was really sad. She really loved him, and I think that broke her heart.
In what Tammy claimed was a desperate attempt to get some sleep, she overdosed on sleeping pills and Valium. The next morning, Tammy was found unconscious and rushed to the hospital.
I can see that Tammy recovered from her overdose within days. But I wonder if strains in her relationship around the time of her death might have sent her reaching for the pills once again.
When she died, Tammy had been married to her fifth husband, former songwriter turned manager George Ritchie, for nearly 20 years. But it appears their relationship was in trouble almost from the outset.
Look at me when I'm talking to you. Now, I've told you before, talking to me like that in front of people.
She told me that her and Richie had gotten into an argument.
We knew what I meant to do.
And he had beat her. And that they had to figure out a way to cover it up.
I offered him credit cards, the car.
Tammy claimed she'd been the victim of a violent abduction, rather than admit it was George Ritchie that had left her with a fractured cheekbone. Despite her injuries, Tammy stayed with him.
Their marriage in general was more of one of a business arrangement than it was anything else. And I saw her 2 weeks before she passed away. She was very emotional. She was crying. She told me that she and Ritchie had been unhappy for a long time, but you know, there wasn't really much she could do about it, but it was the last time that I saw her, and I just remember her holding on to me at the door.
So after 20 years together, had Tammy's relationship with Ritchie reached a breaking point, causing her to take a fatal overdose of sedatives? Toxicology results show no evidence of Valium, but there is promethazine. Promethazine is a sedative used as a sleep aid and to counter nausea, but it's not in an amount large enough to have killed her. But I can see evidence of a drug with potentially lethal consequences.
Do you own or rent your home?
Sure you do. And I bet it could be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com today. That's GEICO.com.
On April 6th, 1998, country music legend Tammy Wynette died in the living room of her Nashville home. World-renowned forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter is investigating Tammy's final moments to solve the mystery of her death.
So far, I've discovered that Tammy suffered from severe abdominal pain due to post-surgical scarring, a chronic but seldom fatal condition. And she has a history of abusing sedatives, but the amount in her system at the time of her death was negligible. Why she died remains unclear.
Friday, April 3rd, 1998, 3 days before her death. Tammy's groundskeeper of 3 years, Mark Crawford, arrives early for work.
I notice Tammy's already in the kitchen.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, Tammy, how are you?
No, I'm fine. Come sit down.
She liked to cook. When I first started, I was 186 pounds. I quickly grew to 216 pounds. She's making biscuits and gravy already, so I already know it's a good day, so I get to eat.
But Tammy is off her food.
She explained to me that she couldn't eat food the way you and I do, and so even though she couldn't, she would try from time to time, but she would pay for it.
The reason why Tammy has such problems eating is revealed in her autopsy report. She was suffering from intestinal dysmotility. Intestinal dysmotility is a condition in which muscles of the digestive system become impaired. In the normal small intestine, liquefied food and secretions, including digestive enzymes, are pushed onward by muscular contractions. But when these contractions are impaired, contents of the intestine are trapped and can cause symptoms such as bloating, nausea, and vomiting.
She'd eat like a bird all day long, just a few bites here and there, and she would kind of graze because she really couldn't tolerate eating more than a few bites at a time.
In 1987, Tammy described her plight to the press. I could only eat half a sandwich. If I had any chips or liquid with it, my stomach would swell and be real distended. One cause of intestinal dysmotility is abdominal adhesions, the scar tissue that had been the source of crippling pain for Tammy for over 25 years.
By the time I was 6 or 7 years old, I can remember her being bent double on the couch and literally holding her side and not being able to sit up, and my sisters and I having to, you know, help her get up or get to her room.
But another major contributor to dysmotility is the use of opiate-based painkillers. And I can see from her toxicology results that tests were carried out for opiate painkillers, prescribed to combat her stomach pains.
1976. Tammy is fresh from another sellout performance. But far from basking in the glory, she's in agony.
Oh, honey, you okay?
Now I'm going to need you to fix me up real quick.
Okay.
Right now.
I'm going.
When Tammy's pain got really bad, she went to her doctor, and she said, you know, can you give me something to take on the road with me?
All right, honey, here you go.
And he taught me how to fill up the syringe, get the bubbles out of it, and give her a shot of Demerol. Tammy always had someone else giving her shots. She never injected herself.
Demerol is the trade name for meperidine, which is a synthetic opioid drug commonly prescribed throughout the 1970s and 80s for moderate to severe abdominal pain. It works by acting on the central nervous system, tricking the brain by suppressing the feeling of pain. The danger of Demerol is that it's highly addictive.
She was healthy and fun and up and going until Demerol started taking control of her life.
We started stopping at hospitals. Sometimes we'd go to more than one until she got as much as she needed.
For my mom, since the doctors prescribed medicine for her, that made it okay.
In 1978, when George Ritchie took control of her career, Tammy was already addicted to Demerol. Hopes that he would intervene proved futile.
He would sneak her drugs, and we would hear him say, "You will never, ever want for anything as long as I'm here."
Tammy's abuse of Demerol lasted another 10 years. Not until November 1986 did she enter rehab.
Mom didn't want to have a drug addiction. So I do remember feeling very encouraged, thinking, okay, maybe this is going to be it.
I can see that Tammy was 3 weeks into a 28-day recovery program at the Betty Ford Center. Her battle to wean herself off Demerol was going well. But it looks like her rehab comes to an abrupt end.
One day after lunch, Tammy began to feel unwell with her stomach bloating. Before long, she was in agony.
Tammy had a total intestinal blockage that required emergency surgery. Doctors discovered that previous surgeries to combat her dysmotility had narrowed the opening where her food leaves her stomach.
According to Tammy, an 8-hour operation saw surgeons remove a quarter of her stomach.
But though the surgery gave her relief from her dysmotility, it meant that Tammy was back on painkillers, her addiction to opiate drugs unbroken.
She still had the pain. She needed the medication. So there was nothing that the Betty Ford Center could do to stop that cycle from continuing. It kind of just made everything intensify worse, 100-fold.
So had Tammy's dependence on opiate painkillers played a fatal role on the night that she died? When I look at the results of the toxicology tests, I can see no evidence of any opiate drugs. So my hunt for the cause of Tammy's death continues.
April 5th, 1998, the night before her death. According to George Ritchie, Tammy starts to feel a painful tingling in her legs.
It's home, it's really badly.
George Ritchie calls Tammy's physician, Dr. Wallace Marsh, in Pittsburgh.
Dr. Marsh told the medical examiner that he urged that she be admitted to the hospital. He was able to recognize Tammy's symptoms because under his care, quote, she had suffered several episodes of thrombosis and embolization. Thrombosis is the formation of a blood clot inside a blood vessel, most commonly in the legs, obstructing the flow of blood through the circulatory system. Embolization is when that clot breaks free and travels around the body. People are at the biggest risk of developing blood clots when they're inactive for long periods of time, most commonly after surgery.
Dr. Marsh had performed numerous surgeries on Tammy over the past 6 years.
At autopsy, the pathologist saw the remnants of old clots in her lungs, known as pulmonary emboli. Pulmonary emboli can be fatal, as they can prevent sufficient oxygen getting to the heart. And I can see that Dr. Marsh concluded she died from heart failure as a result of a suspected blood clot. But when I look at her autopsy report, there is no evidence of a new clot anywhere in her body. Months before her death, she had shown signs of a fatal condition.
Season 2 of the 22 Hours in American Nightmare podcast series is coming soon with a new story, a new mystery.
He said, your mother was murdered. I physically couldn't hold the phone. I remember it falling out of my hands and dropping to the ground.
The vicious murder of Sherry Crandall inside the Maryland hospital where she worked has mystified me, the police, and her family for the past two decades. I'm Washington, D.C. crime reporter Paul Wagner. Join me as I investigate this unsolved murder with an unforgettable twist.
Ms. Crandall predicted that something violent may end up happening.
Don't miss the new season of American Nightmare, the podcast series that was named the number two show of the year by the Associated Press and one of Apple Podcasts' most popular new shows of 2019. Listen to the official Season 2 trailer and subscribe today on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Country music icon Tammy Wynette died suddenly in 1998. Medical examiner Dr. Michael Hunter is investigating her final hours.
When Tammy died, her doctor concluded that a suspected blood clot was to blame. But when an autopsy was performed a year later, the pathologist could find no new blood clot. But Tammy was chronically ill with serious intestinal problems that meant she couldn't eat properly. If adequately medicated, I'm still unsure why she died.
8:05 a.m., April 6th, 1998. 11 hours before Tammy is found dead. Her groundskeeper, Mark Crawford, arrives for work.
Right away, I noticed Tammy was on the couch asleep, and I saw George, and he gives me the... He asked me if I'd take Killer out, which was their little Pomeranian.
Take the dog.
When I picked Killer up, I kind of rubbed her foot with the back of my hand, and foot was cold.
A reason for Tammy's cold feet is contained in her autopsy report.
Tammy was suffering from anemia. Anemia is a decrease in the total amount of red blood cells or hemoglobin in the blood, or a lowered ability of the blood to carry oxygen. It means the heart has to work harder to pump more blood to compensate for the lack of oxygen. Anemia can be caused by iron deficiency, and Tammy had serious nutritional problems. The symptoms of anemia include weakness and feeling tired.
In the 3 years since Mark has known Tammy, she's been plagued by fatigue.
There would be times where she's having good days. She was talkative, you know, and she would like to talk. But there was a lot of times where she would either be sleeping on a couch or back in her bedroom.
Anemia can also cause shortness of breath.
In the last few years, she had oxygen because she had gotten so weak.
But Dr. Hunter finds something more serious in Tammy's autopsy report that was compromising Tammy's ability to breathe.
Tammy had pulmonary edema. Pulmonary edema is the accumulation of fluid in the air sacs in the lungs, making it difficult to breathe.
It's a condition that was threatening her career. 11 months before her death, Tammy appeared at Nashville's Grand Ole Opry.
Trying to be able to actually breathe and sing was a difficult one for her, and she was in so much pain, and she was so out of breath.
Loneliness.
By the time she finally made it off stage, she did have to be put on oxygen. She was very unwell.
Pulmonary edema can be fatal, and the risk of death is even greater when someone is laying down. But with Tammy having an oxygen tank, it appears her physician is treating it. So I don't believe this condition was responsible for her death.
12 p.m., 7 hours before Tammy is found dead. her daughter Jackie drops by.
Mom?
Richie was sitting on one couch. Mom was laying on the other. Her face was forward, facing the inside of the couch, and she was in a fetal position.
It's the same position Tammy's groundskeeper found her in 4 hours ago.
Normally, when I would come in, she would pop up, you know, hi, honey. She didn't do that. Richie was kind of nodding off, and I could tell that he had obviously had something. You know, I sat there very briefly, hoping that she would wake up, but she didn't.
Tell Mom I popped by.
5:15 p.m. Groundskeeper Mark Crawford drops in to say he's leaving for the day.
I noticed George laying on the couch. He was asleep. I noticed Tammy still laying on the couch with a blanket, still asleep. And nothing changed the entire day. She stayed right there on the couch in the same position.
Approximately 7 p.m. George Ritchie claims he tries to wake Tammy and realizes she's dead. 90 minutes later, at 8:30 p.m., he reports her passing to police. George Ritchie informs them Tammy's physician is en route from Pittsburgh to certify her death. When detectives arrive, they note that paramedics can find no heartbeat. Tammy appears to have been deceased for several hours.
I was angry because I thought, she's too young. She's just too young. She's just 55.
I was numb and in shock because the last time I'd actually seen her with the doctor in Pennsylvania was about a month before that, and he told me that her stomach was working and functioning better than it had in years, and I could not for the life of me figure out what could have happened.
Tammy's physician concluded that a blood clot in her lungs had most likely caused her heart to fail. The medical examiner found this conclusion, quote, reasonable and credible, and determined she died of natural causes. So, no autopsy was performed. However, I can see that Tammy's daughters expressed concern that the medical examiner was not given the full story by her husband and physician.
We knew she took a lot of very powerful medication at home for pain, and we were wondering right away whether or not that played anything into it.
But the only drugs mentioned to the police and medical examiner at the time were antibiotics and a blood thinning agent. The medical examiner stated, and I quote, "This caused me to suspect there had been an attempt to provide minimal information to the authorities."
Tammy's doctor was ordered to detail all the medication she was taking at the time of her death. On the list were two controlled substances, the painkiller hydromorphone and the anesthetic midazolam.
The medical examiner acknowledged, had he known about these drugs, he would have ordered an autopsy. The question is, did these painkillers play a fatal role in her death?
I think she had too much medication in her system and it made her quit breathing.
Dr. Michael Hunter is investigating the controversial death in 1998 of country icon Tammy Wynette.
My investigation now centers on the potentially fatal role of two drugs used to kill the pain from her severe intestinal problems: hydromorphone and midazolam, marketed as Versed. Drugs that her husband George Ritchie had failed to tell the authorities she was taking.
Speaking for the first time since Tammy's death, her groundskeeper claims that on the night Tammy died, housekeeper Cleta Hillegas made a startling confession. She claimed she had helped sweep the house for prescription drugs before the police arrived.
She said, we got rid of all the medications in there. There were the 20 vials of Versed that were delivered on March 1st. There were the 9 vials of Versed that were delivered that day.
It makes you wonder, why would you not tell them that? Why would there be a big conspiracy to purposefully hide those things?
A year after her death, her body was exhumed and an autopsy was performed. Toxicology tests were carried out for hydromorphone, but the drug could not be found in her system. But I can see that a test from midazolam was positive. Midazolam is a sedative drug, which is controversially used in some U.S. states as part of the cocktail for lethal injection. Midazolam acts on the neurotransmitter gamma-aminobutyric acid to suppress the central nervous system to induce sleepiness and relax muscles. It's likely she was prescribed the drug to give her relief from the effects of the opiate painkillers, which were exacerbating her intestinal dysmotility, which meant she couldn't eat. But I've discovered something alarming. To safeguard against malnutrition, I can see her physician had fitted a trans-lumbar catheter, a device surgically implanted under the skin to give intravenous access to a major vein for liquid food. But it had a dual role. It also provided instant access to a major vein for pain-killing injections.
I don't think people knew the extent of her addiction at home, so that giving her access anytime, all the time, to a vein was just kind of like handing her a loaded gun. Oh.
Oh. The danger of midazolam is respiratory failure, and Tammy's breathing was already compromised by fluid on her lungs. The drug manufacturer states that the drug should only be used under strict hospital supervision.
It's a fact Tammy's daughter, Georgette, a trained hospital nurse, knows well.
There had to be a physician present in the room when I gave the medicine. The patient had to have a heart monitor on, an oxygen monitor. There had to be a crash cart at the bedside in case they quit breathing. And there had to be a medicine called Remazicon at the bedside, which is a reversal agent. And to my knowledge, there were absolutely no safeguards in place.
A nurse occasionally visited Tammy at home. But it was George Ritchie who took responsibility for Tammy's pain relief.
My stepfather prided himself on doing all of my mom's medication. In fact, he always wanted everybody to witness what he was doing.
George was medicated a lot, too. George took Valium like it was candy.
So, did Tammy die from a lethal accidental overdose of midazolam?
I think she had too much medication in her system and it made her quit breathing.
But assessing how much medication she had been given was complicated by the medical examiner's original decision to not perform an autopsy. Within hours of her death, she'd been sent to a funeral home for embalming. Embalming entails removing the blood and pumping formaldehyde and alcohol into the body to preserve it. The big problem is that formaldehyde is known to break down benzodiazepine drugs like midazolam very quickly, making the task of finding the drug extremely difficult. Samples of Tammy's kidneys and liver were tested for midazolam. 4 labs found no trace of the drug, but 1 did. This makes it highly likely that midazolam was in her system when she died, but due to the delayed autopsy and embalming process, we'll never know for sure how much or whether it caused her death.
Dr. Hunter has discovered the final piece of the puzzle, which he believes answers the question of what killed Tammy Wynette at the age of just 55.
Thrombosis had left Tammy's lungs littered with blood clots and had contributed to a rare condition that towards the end of her life was a ticking time bomb, pulmonary hypertension.
Pulmonary hypertension is high blood pressure in the arteries that supply the lungs. Over time, the increase in blood pressure thickens the walls of the pulmonary arteries, making it harder for the right side of the heart to pump blood through them. Gradually, the right side of the heart would have become weaker. And on the night she died, it stopped beating. Tammy was a very sick woman. Her problems started 30 years earlier with a hysterectomy, resulting in scar tissue that surgery couldn't solve. Intestinal dysmotility meant she could barely eat. To cope, Tammy was dependent on painkillers that weakened her still further. The pulmonary hypertension would have been the final blow to a body that had been failing Tammy for years. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Autopsy. Don't forget to subscribe at podcast1.com with the Podcast One app or at Apple Podcasts. Then go to reels.com, that's reelz.com, for clips, extras, and more from the TV version of the series, including reenactments and autopsy photos you'll only see on Reels channel. Find Reels on your TV at reels.com. I'm Dr. Michael Hunter.